Since most of these people are cheering for the home team, I'm going to root for the visitors. I'm a big visitors fan, especially the kind that make coffee in the morning before they leave.
Welcome to episode 65 of the Movie Mixtape. My name is Dirk, and I am intimidated by your sexual history. But please come in, sit down, you'll be more comfortable. Joining me in this panel of friendship, they can only move their head 15 degrees to the right, following an intimate injury sustained whilst recording. It's Marcy Dale. How are you, Marcy Dale?
Oh my God, what was I doing while recording?
You ask me, but I believe somebody's father walked in on you while you were doing it.
Oh, Jesus. You started that, and I was like, please say Mikey. Please say Mikey. So, of course not. I guess we're back to negative things, weird things
what?
About me. You were doing so great, like, the last couple episodes. Now it's
Marcy,
all.
I feel bad that you can only, if you had to check your blind spot in the car, you'd have to literally move your hips and not just, I couldn't move your neck just to see what was coming. Are you all right, kid?
I am all right. How are you, Dirk?
A plus. I had to think about it.
Is A that plus. A 69%?
Well, you're going to have to cut that out because that was a personal backstage conversation we had about that. So,
Oh, you have to cut it out because you're editing.
Damn it! Well, now that I'm done talking with Marcy, this person, I love them. And not in a friendly way, although I think we're great friends. And not in a misplaced affection puppy dog way. I love them. Very, very simple. Very truly. It's Mikey P. How are you, Mikey P?
Dirk, will you be my hetero life mate? Snoozy boogies.
I thought we'd already agreed on this.
Yes.
Thank you for confirming it live on air to millions and millions of people. You all right?
Yeah, I'm great, man. Did you see the X-Men 97 today? Today we were recording on a Wednesday.
What the hell?
What?
Mikey, just straight into our list of content.
Let's go right
immediately.
Oh, my God.
I haven't seen the one from today, and I already said I haven't seen the one from today.
Yeah, so I said Dirk. Okay. Sorry.
No, I don't know what to say. I can leave. Bye.
Marcy's just raised a wine glass to her mouth now. She's checked out. She is entirely checked out of the next probably 75 minutes if we're looking. But hello, yeah, this is us. Marcy, Mikey, and Merc. We are the Movie Mixtape. And what we do here on the Movie Mixtape is we celebrate friendship by sharing the movies that we love. Just like you used to share music with people you loved back in the day, because we know you're old enough with music mixtapes or playlists like what Marcy used to do. We curate 4 movie mixtapes for each other. And this is the start of a new mix. And it's all Mikey P's idea. Mikey P, please explain to us, what is a rediscovered mix?
Sometimes something we grew up with that was personal to us. The whole idea of this mix, sometimes there are movies in our past that were very important, and maybe we haven't seen them in like 10, 20 years, something like that. And so the point of this mix, I thought, was let's go back to what made us those people way back when, to see if maybe these movies hold up. Our tastes have changed. Do they still resonate with us? Did something change in us since then? And so the movie I chose for that one of those movies that was, I don't know how to describe it, but it came into my life when I was a teenager. It was called Chasing Amy. And Kevin Smith, the director, writer-director, was somebody very important to me. So like I thought this was a perfect movie for this mix, even though I created this mix.
Beautiful. What I like about that, Mikey, is you did my second job for me by explaining what the movie was. So you get lots of points. Marcy, please take note. So that's it. That's what we're going to do later on. But this is the bit that if you're not interested in, you could probably just look down at the chapters and skip straight to the movie talk if you want, but we're going to have a little bit of a chat, see what's been going on. But one thing we have all been watching, and I think enjoying, is the new X-Men cartoon, right? Is that what we've been doing?
I'm annoyed we didn't do our X-Men podcast now.
What would have been our X-Men podcast? Well, we could still do it, can't we?
Yeah.
Do you want to just do it in this episode? Or do you want to...
Let's go through it.
So we've been watching... Have you been watching... Yeah. Has everybody been watching X-Men 97? Have you all been watching it? We have. Marcy hasn't watched this episode 4.
I haven't seen the newest one, no.
But by the time this episode comes out, it will be on episode 6, I think. So, I mean, we're well behind. We're well behind everyone.
It's great. I think we were talking about a little, and one of the comments I keep seeing is like, it's pretty concise how it's purposeful and it's dialogue, and it gets to these stories. These comics are, you know, most of them are Chris Claremont comics, and they go on, and little bits go on through like 20 issues, but they kind of really condense it pretty well balanced in one episode. And the animation's like super fun. And today's was, we were talking, Dirk and I, the third episode where they went into like, half of the episode was in an arcade, which is cool to see, but I think Dirk said it best. He said it wasn't, there were no consequences of really what happened in that one. But the second half, this life death story, probably one of the most romantic things ever written in comics.
Really?
And I mean, the relationship with Storm and Forge, I mean, it gets deep. And that's, you know, Barry Windsor Smith is probably one of my favorite comic creators, and he drew that issue, and they kind of did a lot of like their Storm is dressed similar to what she was wearing in the comics, and I'm starting to go off about X-Men here.
Hey, look, we're allowed. I know that we were all very, I think we all were. Marcy, were you very excited?
Yeah, especially because I would say overall Gambit is my favorite X-Men, and you just don't see Gambit anywhere on anything, except for like an X-Men's Origins Wolverine movie, which I actually really like that Gambit performance. So I'm happy to see Gambit. I hope he doesn't get his heart broken. And that's all I gotta say.
A lot of heat for Gambit. All these Proud Boys coming out about it, like how
just
he dresses.
Shove it, like maybe wear.
Talk to me about that.
Maybe just put on a crop top and feel liberated yourselves, you idiots. Like
you've
that's how
you
I
have
feel
abs like
that.
You're in a crop top. That's what I'm saying. The body of Gambit.
I hate this country.
None of that filters through over here. None of that.
I've not seen any of this.
I mean, I am 97 years old, so I don't understand Reddit. At all, so I'm not on anything like that, but I've not seen any negativity about
American males are very sensitive, you understand, and a man that wears fingerless gloves, they're upset when he's a little more flamboyant with his dress in a kids animation show, so they take to the internet in droves and get upset about it.
He's been wearing colored eye contacts all his life. What are they banging on about?
Exactly. You know, he's wearing a sock over his face the whole time. Like, what do you think's going on?
His outfit makes no sense. You know, already.
He's wearing a trench coat in the summer.
Exactly. In one of these episodes, no spoilers, they go to a nightclub and he puts his trench coat over his on again. So, look, I mean, this man clearly doesn't know how to get dressed. And now you're moaning, can't you take that context into appreciation when he puts on his beautiful little crop top, as Mikey said, with those gorgeous abs, okay? Just wanting to give Rogue a little bit of eye candy. Mm-hmm. That's probably what he was doing. Let the man cook his beignets. Let him cook them. Yeah. Just do it. Do it. Do it for me, Remy.
It's been fun.
Feel it's spectacular. And was very excited to watch it again. And the two episode opener just blew me socks off. It was funny in the way that I think was even more hilarious than the original animation. I don't remember laughing this much in the original one. Wolverine seems to be just like a comedy foil in a lot of these episodes. me and Bets, my 9-year-old, have been repeating lines to each other that Wolverine has said. She's apparently been telling kids at school she'll give them a C-section. If they don't comply with whatever game she wants them to play. She made us film one of the scenes on my phone the other day as well. She put some clothes pegs on her fingers and said she was going to be Wolverine, and we filmed a couple of those scenes. I'm enjoying Morph. He's been a revelation. I've been really enjoying that. I like how every single episode seems to have different opening credits. Mm-hmm. That's good too. And it's just the best theme song ever created, and I can't believe they've even made it even better. It just gets me so excited to watch what's gonna happen. And thank Charles Xavier that Scott Summers, aka the greatest living mutant, has finally gotten the press that he deserves and is now acknowledged as being a total badass. Thank you, X-Men 97.
He's terrible dad.
Yeah. He's a terrible dad.
Jumping out of a plane and without a parachute is pretty badass, but yeah.
Yeah. World's worst father. Absolutely. The world's worst father. But an incredible leader of a superhero team, which is where I'm investing in him from, because he's not my dad. I'm excited to hopefully see more X-Men come into it. And I always enjoy when Morph turns into a random X-Men and we pop a little bit in our household for that, including my daughter's namesake had an extended cameo. So that was always nice. Really, really enjoying it. We got a couple of bits of housekeeping then before we move on. We, as everybody is aware, we are a member of the Tape Deck family. Hello, we are. Pleased to meet you, along with so many of the great podcasts. But now, we are no longer the youngest Tape Deck podcast. There is a new one, created from the ashes of theme park rides, and it is called The Yeti Is Still Broken. I believe it's presented by Danny with Peter and Cody. Marcy, you've had a good listen to it, haven't you?
Yeah, I really liked it. So Peter and Cody and Danny, I'm not too familiar with Peter, but Cody, he makes these really cool replicas, like miniatures, of different movie scenes and a lot with the Haunted Mansion. Guillermo del Toro has actually like bought stuff off of him, which is pretty awesome. And then Danny, our sweet Danny, you know, amazing artwork as always, but I really like theme parks and they're doing deep dives, not just Disney. The Yeti Is Broken is a reference to, what's the Everest ride called, Mikey, in Animal Kingdom? I can't think
Everest,
of it.
Isn't it?
No, it's like Expedition Everest. There we go.
Okay.
And there was a Yeti back in the day for it, and they like an animatronic Yeti, and they've just never have fixed it. So that's a funny name for a podcast. But no, they've done The Great Movie Ride, which was a big thing for me when I was growing up. And then they did The Amazing Spider-Man Ride in Universal, which I've never been on. And then they also did the, I can't remember the exact name of it, but they did like the Alien Counter Ride at Disney World, which is now like Stitch's Great Escape or something stupid like that, hasn't been open for years, but it used to be this really scary alien ride. So I really like theme parks and they're all pretty chill and they all really know what they're talking about. So I've just been having a fun time getting educated and relaxing to it so far.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Danny, knowing Danny, and he always was talking about certain things about the park, so it's good to hear his background. But all three of them they've either worked on the parks or they've lived in the Orlando area. And Cody actually did I think you call him a diorama of like one of the things that Danny drew too, which was super cool.
Yeah.
They did something cool. They launched three episodes when they came out too. And the first one was like just a getting to know them, which I thought was a good idea. So you just get to hear them talk and hear their experiences. And then the other two episodes, they go into ride specific. So it was a good listen. And like Marcy said, like about, especially because I think it adds value when you've been to, like I've been to Orlando a couple times and some of these things and later in life. So I didn't really know a lot of the history. So it's cool. Welcome. We don't have to get hazed anymore in the Tape Deck community because we're no longer the rookies. I like it.
No. We're going to be giving them a wedgie, giving them a wet willy, licking our finger and sticking it in their ear holes. Welcome.
Hey, Proby, get me a drink. Get me a drink, Proby.
Broby?
Yeah, that's what they call them in like the firehouse. You're on probation until you get the job. Yeah. Yeah, so we call him Proby. Yeah, Proby, get it.
Yeah, Proby. Fetch me an orange cordial. So go listen to that. We'll put a link for it in our show notes. And the other bit of housekeeping is, look, we've got lots of podcasts we are friends with because we're really, really friendly bunch. And some of those, and a couple of those podcasts, Seti Bimco Part 2, The Revenge, and Spaghetti and Freddy have their own Discord, which is called the Island of Misfit Podcasts. And they've kind of had an unofficial Discord channel for us for a while. And this just past week or so, we've just claimed it. We've just claimed it. We put our flag in the ground and said, do you know what? This is our channel. Come have a chat with us. So if you do want to get more involved with the show, have a chat with us, then I'll put a link in the show notes again to so that you can join the Discord of the Island of Misfit Podcasts, where you'll also get access, like I said, to Seti Bimco and Spaghetti and Freddy. Well, that would be really great if you could join us there. All right.
I'm going to post some behind the scenes there. How about that?
Post it.
I'm going to start working that channel.
Work it, Mikey. Mikey, to be fair, you've already been working it like a pro. You know, I've been really learning from you as somebody. Mike, I don't want to tell tales, but Mikey's the king of Discord. You know, he is able to engage with anyone on any level and just start a conversation out of like two hydrogen molecules. Just could do it. Just rubs them together and out springs dialogue. But we'll all be there. Click in the show notes and have a look, and we'd love to see you. Well, shall we talk about this movie? Mikey, this is your pick. Chasing Amy.
Let's get into it. And, you know, I was doing some research for it, and I came across this old article from the Comics Journal in March of 1998, which I'd like to read, actually.
Please do.
Banky Edwards is back with his new smash hit series, Baby Dave. Banky now writes and draws his own comic, a reputable elevation of his career from his prior rise to fame as a co-creator of Bluntman and Chronic, a risque comic about a weed-smoking vigilante duo. Just a mere year ago, Banky was only drawing up controversy at comic conventions, where he was seen several times accosting would-be fans. This author, in particular, had his own mother called a tracer in retaliation for mistakenly inquiring what an inker does. Absent from Banky's new book are credits to his former co-creator, Holden McNeil. The two had worked together from their high school upbringing and launched into the industry with their semi-autobiographical work, 37. From selling this independent run at the local mall to a stratospheric rise with Bluntman and Chronic, Bank Hold Up Productions were even in talks and being courted by television execs and maybe even the eventual forgotten movie with Mark Hamill. Baby Dave is a sure needed win for Banky. As for Holden McNeil, I actually was able to snag a hard-to-find small print run copy of his new comic, Chasing Amy. If the inside the industry rumors are true, Banky and Holden parted ways due to a relationship Holden started with fellow comic creator Alyssa Jones, her comic Idiosyncratic Routine. Chasing Amy reads like a confirmation of this speculation. While the names are different, Chasing Amy is a tale about a genuine relationship that flourishes but hits a ceiling when the male protagonist creates conflict stemmed from his own self-consciousness of his inadequacies and inexperience in the bedroom. In contrast to Baby Dave or Bluntman and Chronic, Chasing Amy is a book with such care and nuances, the emotion it generates, it could only have been conveyed by someone who has lived through these experiences, or at least Holden finally found something personal to say. If only Bluntman and Chronic were there to offer advice that could have saved him. Which
if
I thought was...
only.
If only.
If only that was possible. What an incredibly apt article you discovered there. Where did you read that, Mikey?
That was the Comics Journal. You know, industry trade magazine. So I want to backtrack a little bit, just talking about Kevin Smith leading up to this point, because I think it's similar to anybody kind of, maybe Dirk's experience was the same as mine, but Kevin Smith was... Everybody kind of knows his story, rising to fame with Clerks, and he was inspired by Linklater's Slacker, which was like, oh, everybody's just, this is how people talk. And this is right before the internet. So if you were like a comic fan or you watched like Star Wars or geeked out, you could really only talk about that with your friends. And it wasn't like on TV like you see today. And Kevin Smith was like the champion of geekdom because he was like, you know, there's two guys talking about Star Wars and construction workers on the Death Star and Clerks. And he was really our champion that was bringing this to a bigger market. And Mallrats was like a little more slapsticky. It was like his Animal House. At the time, I was trying to be like the best comic book drawer ever. And so like I would sit down at my desk and I would like listen to the same like 10 CDs I had. And after a while, like I was like, I'm going to put a movie on in the background. I moved my drawing desk downstairs and I put it in front of the TV and I just would put on like whatever VHS I had. But that got distracting. That was keeping me from what I wanted to do. So I started tape recording certain movies that had a lot of dialogue. And it was like Clerks, Mallrats, and Pulp Fiction was the other one. So like I probably have seen those first two movies like a million times. And Kevin Smith is coming into like the stardom. He's now like the king of geeks and he's writing comics. He's writing Daredevil. He writes some other stuff. So leading up to this, I'm 16, 17 now. In my personal life, I have this girlfriend I'm just going to say she's probably the worst person I could have dated. Like she was absolute nightmare. I mean, it says to what her character was like, but she was really like put me in a, it was different than Alyssa in this movie. She really put me in a place where I felt badly about myself, but also I was self-conscious about my lack of inexperience or just have to change my idea of what a relationship is as a 17-year-old. So all that's going on when this movie comes out. And then my mom worked at a high school at the time, and I had some Mallrats art in the back that she was hanging. I did some Mallrats art. And a kid came in, and she came home, and she told me, he's like, this kid was like, oh, that's from Mallrats. I recognized it. She's like, yeah. He's like, oh my God, Chasing Amy sucks, man. I just saw that movie and it was like, it was so stupid. It was about a relationship. Jay and Silent Bob are in it for 5 minutes. Silent Bob talks for like 5 minutes. And I was like, Silent Bob talks? Like, what's going on? So I kind of stayed away from the movie for a while because everybody's telling me it's so stupid, so stupid. Finally watched it on at home. And I think like the entire time I couldn't have thought of a movie that resonated with me more at the time. Than this movie that stuck with me. And I mean, I cried several times when I watched this movie. It just felt like something so personal to me. And to read that this was Kevin Smith's actual, you know, he jokes like instead of therapy, he wrote this movie because this was his relationship with Joey Lauren Adams. And this is things that he brought into the characters. And I felt it was like so raw. You know, if Letterboxd existed back then, this would have been my top four. You know, I thought about some of those things. This is how like you talked when you were a teenager in the 90s, and some of the F words are really kind of disturbing now and jarring in this movie. And it seems very juvenile. And, you know, my opinion of this movie kind of changed because I'm like, maybe it was kind of small minded at the time, even though I thought it was big brain back then, but it was kind of small minded now. The language doesn't hold up. And I see some reviews on Letterboxd and some people are like, Kevin Smith should not be representing the gay community in any way. So I was kind of, and you know, we'll talk about Kevin maybe later on, but like it kind of, I was like, maybe he wasn't a genius that I thought he was back then. I thought this was a mix that I kind of wanted to revisit this movie. I saw Yoli going through, a friend of the show, Yoli. She started logging in order, Clerks and Mallrats, which I talked about. And I was like, yes, I love these movies. And I think I was even commenting on it to her. And I really wondered what her opinion of Chasing Amy was. I started wondering, what is some other people that I know in my life, that what would their opinion be of this movie? And that's why I kind of picked this mix. I picked this movie, but I picked this mix really to coincide with the movie. I would really like to hear from Marcy and what her initial impression is, I guess, or what leading up to this movie, she said she had never heard it before and what she thought it was, just what your feelings were.
Well, I have heard of it, and I knew what the premise was of the movie, and I knew that there were, like, red flags around it. I like Kevin Smith. I love Dogma. I haven't seen it in a long time. I've actually never seen Clerks or Mallrats. I think I was just too young when these movies came out to see them or know what they were at the time. But, you know, like, I love movies, so if somebody interests me, I will look them up. Kevin Smith is pretty famous. I really like him a lot as a person, too. So I know almost every movie that he's directed, but I just haven't seen a lot of them. I'm not the biggest Ben Affleck fan, if I'm being honest. So that's probably another reason I never really checked this out. But Mikey, I did message you the other day, and I do love Jason Lee a lot. I just think he's really funny. And I kind of forget that he is like one of the original in this group, too. It's kind of fun watching these and just seeing the friendships, which is a big thing I like. Like, you have your group, you have your posse, and you're going to keep making movies with them, especially when you start so small, like a Clerks. You know, your people that have been backing you from the beginning, you're not going to forget about them. And it's nice to see that even to this day, like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are huge A-list celebrities, but they're still good friends with Kevin Smith, and I'm sure they'll still do him a favor if he asks. And I think that's all pretty genuine and cool. I think, you know, yes, it's jarring, some of the language in this movie, even just the whiplash speed of which you're going back to the 90s watching this movie.
Yeah.
It's not subtle at all. It is like you're right there. It's just, you know, even with all of that, I still think there are some really good messages, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, overall with this movie. And we'll get more into it. I don't want to, like, talk about the whole thing right now. But that's just where I'm, I guess, my initial thoughts were for this. Yeah.
Dirk, you kind of had the same thing as that. Am I wrong in thinking that?
Not wrong. But I kind of was into Kevin Smith before I knew who Kevin Smith was, I think. So I'd seen Clerks as a mid to late teen, which I enjoyed, but wasn't like crazy about. But I did like it. But it was Mallrats for me. Do you know what? The difficult second album, Mallrats. Like, we used, when we were at university, I mentioned going to Blockbuster, but there was a local video shop that was like an independent one. And if you got a new release, they let you get one of the older releases for free with it. And we always got Mallrats. Like, or at least 7 times out of 10, we would pick Mallrats.
With Office Space.
Just, yeah, exactly. And just absolutely just found Mallrats hysterical. And maybe there was an element of it being, this is the culture that I enjoy, like the comic book culture and that sort of thing that kind of initially drew me in. But like you said, Marcy, Jason Lee, I fell in love with Jason Lee in Mallrats. He is just, I'm going to be honest, I don't feel like he's a great actor, right? But I just warm to him on a very personal level. And he's one of those people I will just go, look, mate, I don't feel like this is a really good performance, but I'm with you right now. And if I could hold your hand, I would. And I'm laughing along. I am laughing along with you. So I'm invested in Jason Lee in particular. And I think I only realized when I went to a comic shop and I bought Chasing Dogma, I think, which is the comic that is it a comic that bridges Chasing Amy with Dogma? Yeah. And I was in the shop and the guy goes, oh, you like Kevin Smith? And I was like, do I? Who's Kevin Smith? And he goes, oh, this guy who's done this comic and did those films. Oh, right. I had no idea who he was talking about. And he goes, if you like Kevin Smith, why don't you read this other comic he's doing? Like, mate, I'm not interested in your other comic. I'm here for this one and I'm leaving. But that was when I think I realized, oh, this Kevin Smith's a thing, is it? And so I was into his films before I knew who he was and the mythology around Kevin Smith. Obvious now, looking back in hindsight, oh my goodness, how could you not see that this man has written Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy? How could you not see his stamp all over them? But yeah, then so I saw Chasing Amy after Clerks, Mallrats, and it was probably my least favorite of the three, I would say, at the time. And I don't know, maybe I still liked it. Maybe I didn't find it as funny, and that's what I hoped it would be. When you picked Chasing Amy, I thought it was a really great pick for this mix because it is definitely something that I would want to find out how I felt about it now watching it. So it was a really good pick.
At the end of, like, when you picked this, at the end of the last episode, I said I had a funny story, and I think now would actually be a good time for it. It's nothing personal, but it's just a funny story I heard. Actually from Kevin Smith. So they were trying to cast Dogma, and they were having difficulty trying to get like bigger people they were excited to work with and whatnot. And perchance Alan Rickman was somewhere and he was like, can we talk to the people that wrote Chasing Amy? And that's how Alan Rickman got into Dogma.
That's amazing.
Wow. Nice. No way. Wow.
Yep. So he really liked this movie a lot, and that's what got him into working with Kevin Smith. And then it was funny because I know Alan Rickman's not in this movie, but he did work with Kevin Smith. And Kevin Smith said, like, you know, they tried to work together again. It never happened. But anytime he was over in London, he would take Kevin out to dinner. And anytime he was in New York, Kevin would take him.
Oh, wow.
To dinner.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I think that they had a friendship for like the rest of his life. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool hearing that.
I think it relates to what you were saying before, Marcy, and some other films we've covered. I think we do have a particular penchant for groups of friends who enjoy making movies together. And I think Kevin Smith definitely seems that type of person. If you're his mate, you are set for life, you know, in that. And he, you know, Chasing Amy, the three leads, he met all of them on Morat's, right? That was where he first met them all, wrote them all specifically these parts in this film. And then, yeah, then comes Dogma and then blah, blah, blah. And Jason Lee obviously is also in Dogma too. So, like, just mates.
Well, bigger than that, too. Like, Ben Affleck, when he was on the set of this, he gave Kevin Smith the script for Good Will Hunting. Matt and Ben, they go on, they hit the upper echelon of movie stardom.
Yeah.
But it kind of all starts here.
I was listening to the director's commentary on this, which was, I didn't realize this was a Criterion movie as well, Mikey, bringing the level of the podcast up. But my goodness, if you ever listen to the director's commentary from the Criterion Laserdisc, it is not Criterion level.
No.
Let me say that. Have you listened to it, Mikey?
Yes.
It is a bunch of fools in a room, some of whom are very high.
Well, Kevin actually talked about, like, Jay Mewes, who's on it. He was actually, he does a podcast later on in life with Jason, and it's actually pretty good. I mean, there's thousands of hours now of Kevin Smith talking, but he does one with Jason Mewes, who plays Jay in this. And he was Jay, and this was in the middle of, like, his super drug use. And he said
because he was wasted.
During the taping of that audio commentary, he said he was just passing out, and then he was just completely, like, out of it, and he would like wake up. He was out of his mind during the recording of that commentary. Since you mentioned
it's a funny timestamp because it's just Marcy as like Good Will Hunting screenplay has been greenlit to be made into a movie. So, and it's a lot of like Ben Affleck talk about Chasing Amy being his first lead role, and then talking about writing screenplays and blah blah blah. It's just funny how it's a real like a timestamp of cinema just before Affleck and Damon erupted.
You know, just backtracking a little bit, I didn't realize, like, it didn't really dawn on me that this is Ben Affleck's like first leading role. I just have to say, like, even though like I'm not a big Affleck fan, I just love that he's still like humble beginnings, and you know, he didn't forget where it all started, and I think that's pretty cool because some people just become total dicks when they become super famous and they kind of blow off all the people that helped them get there. But it's kind of nice that he hasn't. I think they're still all friends with each other, imagine.
So. Kevin did not let him forget the stuff he did for him, too. That's the other thing. Kevin did not let him forget.
But so we were discovering this again, Mikey.
Yeah.
So where's your brain at now? You've rewatched it.
Rewatched it. Right away. I mean, it starts off in a comic convention, and right away, I'm like, yes, this is what I love. They were talking about comic creators in a movie. This is my dream. There's two guys sitting at a table across from each other and they're making a comic. They're going to comic conventions and talking to people. They're just going out to a bar and then talking about comics. I'm like, this is everything. Why? What's wrong with this? But everything is great about this. Is like, I wanted to live in that world.
And Mike Allred's in it.
Mike Allred in the beginning.
Yeah. Oh,
love Madman. Love Chow Yun Fat. That's right.
Give me a kiss. Give me a kiss on my lips, Mike Allred.
And that's it. They had Kevin Smith commissioned him to actually do 6 pages of like Blunt Man and Chronic that they use in the opening of this movie. And right away, I'm like, this is a comic nerd's dream.
Yeah. I loved the opening with all the artwork. And it's so funny because of how modern that is now. I know they don't do it as much. I think it's still hand-drawn, but even the MCU movies, it goes through all the characters. It used to be comic book pages. They used to do that for all the Marvel movies. But now it's just like the characters are so iconic that they just do that. But it reminded me, like, that's where we're at now. And I wonder if that had any inspiration to what you see in superhero movies now in the beginning.
Again, like Kevin Smith talking about comics before anybody was talking about comics.
Yeah, because Marcy, this is 97. So before X-Men, before Spider-Man.
Before Blade, because Blade's 98, right?
Ooh, before Blade. Mm-hmm. Obviously after Keaton as Batman. But you know, a lot of things are after Keaton as Batman. So I think part of the reason, maybe I'm reading between the lines, why you picked Chase and Amy, because were you worried about whether it would still be relevant or appropriate in today's culture for the topic of the movie. Like, was that part of the reason why you picked it? Because in a nutshell, it is a man falling in love with a lesbian. And then the man refuses to kind of accept that she's a lesbian. Then by some kind of magical twist of fate, she also does fall in love with him. But then he cannot handle her sexual history. And then the relationship ends. Basically, is the film in a nutshell, right? So there's lots of ups and downs and lots of difficult conversations. Conversations that are difficult to hear, I should say. Throughout this film, how did they sit with you this time?
It was very like when I was 14, 15, and like you just discover certain things. You're just discovering sex, or you're just discovering certain things, and you and your friends might say certain things. It's a very naive type of way of talking about things. But maybe that's how it was in the 90s, because the one thing that doesn't really sit well is that these characters are like late 20s, 30 years old. And it's like they're just discovering that there's gay people or something like that. And it could have been like that, like in the late 90s, like they never really, you know, they're Banky's gawking at the two of them kissing. And he's like, he's never seen it before or something like that. And I think when, like, sometimes the F word keeps getting used, I don't mean fuck, but I mean, they keep saying that in a way that shouldn't, I don't think, be used. And I think was just kind of like irresponsible for the time. And I think like, some of the vernacular doesn't track, and some of the like the Holden McNeil just seems like an idiot, like he's never heard about certain things. Banky's at like the train station, he's going to Comic-Con, he pulls out like a bunch of like filthy magazines, and then there's a kid there, and he's showing the kid there, and I'm like, why? Yeah, it's funny for a laugh, but like, I guess like now that I'm older, like that doesn't work. Those things aside, a lot of those things were just kind of, you could kind of almost write off like of the time, or it's just like Kevin Smith didn't really know any better at the time. I think what, when you talked about the relationship, and I don't mean to trivialize it, but like, I feel like there was no other type of movie that really kind of has these conversations. Some of it's really smart dialogue. And even when Holden confesses his love to Alyssa later on, because they're hanging out as friends and they're really getting to know each other as friends. So I think their love is believable because they were hanging out without the idea that they were going to have sex with each other. So they just got to know each other. And that's why I think it's believable, is because they got to know who each other is. We're not going to sleep with each other. We're not going to be in a relationship. We're just going to hang out and have fun. And that's why I think it's somebody that, when Alyssa Ben Affleck professes his love to her, and which she gets mad at. I think this is one of the best scenes in the movie too, is when they're hanging out so long, and finally Ben Affleck just breaks down and he's like, I love you. Like, I'm in love with you. I can't go another day without telling you. And she walks out of the car in the rain and she's pissed. I think as a kid, I didn't know why, but I think later on you kind of make sense, because she says like, that's unfair. You say that now everything changes. Like, your relationships, we are not friends anymore. Like, we can't just be friends after you say what you said to me. He walks back to the car and she realizes she loves him too. And when they're sitting later at night, and he says, you know, or it was later on, but he says, why me? Like, how come it's me? She gives like a monologue that was kind of believable to me now, is that she started exploring girls too, because she was really always looking for a deep connection to somebody, something on like a spiritual level, something on not like the surface level. And she, so that's why she opened her mind to women in the first place, because she was looking for somebody. Why can't I love a woman? Maybe the woman would love me the way I want to be loved. And she's like, I was doing the same thing. Like, I was closing myself off. Like, why can't I have this connection with you? Why am I going to shut it down simply because of this label? So I thought all of that was super believable. At the time I watched it, I was like, okay, it's like a gimmick for a movie. But I think later on in life, I think looking back, I'm like, this was real raw, deep conversations, I thought. What about you, Marcy?
I think it has... like it's believable, and then like where you really are in love with somebody, but they just don't feel that way about you. And you kind of just have to either be okay with that and have them in your life, or you have to, I don't know, just cut them out of your life if it's too hard. And I just thought Ben Affleck was so needy. I thought he so like really wanted to sleep with her, even though he was saying like, yeah, mm-hmm, she's my friend and stuff.
That's a good point.
So I like that. And I, because that is real, and it is real life to not want to tell somebody how you feel because you don't want to screw it up, like whatever the friendship is. And it's scary, and I think they get that really right, that it's so scary to tell somebody how you really feel, especially when it's like your really good friend, and especially when you're like, I don't think this is going to go well if I say this, because I think he's just at the point where he's like, listen, we got to stop hanging out, and here's why. I think that is genuinely like why he says it to her finally, like, I can't do this anymore. And I like that, and I just like that this movie's with Alyssa. She's just trying to find love and acceptance. And like, that's all we're all looking for. And I think the movie gives that kind of a good message. Like, find the person that gets you, find the person that makes you happy. I cannot believe the route this movie went, though, after that. just because it's like they finally had everything they were like looking for. We'll get into it. but no, there's like some really relatable stuff to it. And I think that makes it timeless in a way, because life is still like that. Feelings are still like that. Relationships are still like that. But a lot of it has aged, especially the lingo, especially like the immaturity of it. Yeah, it definitely, it's like, I think it has an overall relatability to it, which makes it, you know, a good movie, in my opinion. Yeah.
I think one of the things that I'm really grateful for you, Marcy, is for our conversations, is how you are able to provide a context for me sometimes when I don't understand. Like, for example, from a movie from the 1940s, and I think I've not always been great at kind of letting that enter me through osmosis. You know, sometimes I'm a bit stubborn. I'm like, but no, that's not the way it should be. You know, like, why is this guy treating this woman this way? Do you know what I mean? You're always kind of really good at sort of saying, well, this is how the world was back then. You've got to think about this. You've got to think about that. And I think this is a real microcosm of the 2 years before the internet kind of really sort of is everywhere. People don't know what's around the corner, right, let alone what's in the next city. And some of the language that was spoken in the early to mid 90s, when people started to become aware that, hey, there are people out there who don't live life like you, was fucking atrocious. And this is captured here, rightly or wrongly. I have no doubt that these were conversations being held exactly like this up and down the country. I think we had a similar thing, Marcy, when we did Submarine and some of the playground language, do you remember? And it felt uncomfortable hearing that. I heard that playground language when I was a kid. And similarly, so many people my age must have heard this type of language. I think the thing that allows me to place it into a context is that this is not a story about the white male dream of turning a lesbian. Hey, you know, she just needed me to know that she wanted guys, right? This is a story about a guy being absolutely insecure and being a dick and fucking everything up and never and then not being able to recover the relationship, because that's what would happen. And really what this film is about is not about gay or straight. It's about fragile male ego and being somebody who's unable to accept somebody's previous sexual history in a relationship. I think because he's the fall guy and not the hero, I think it can still work. I don't know. What do you think, Mikey?
Yeah, that was beautiful. That was really well said, both of you. The ending, I think, is where I think Marcy was alluding to, that it goes in a different direction than her. And I think that's Dirk kind of led up to that. It really is about, you know, they work out, they figured themselves out as a couple. The Banky character, which we could talk about, he is upset. First, he's like, it's never going to work out. She's gay. And then he sees them sleep together. And so he's like, okay, it's kind of like you broke that hurdle, but there's other hurdles. And he brings his yearbook and he starts digging up dirt on her. And he's the one that discovers all the suburban legends about her. And it kind of culminates in this big fight at an ice hockey arena. I think is well directed. Even though it's a lot on the nose, there's a hockey fight breaks out and they're going back and forth while they're having this argument. And when there's a knockout punch lands, Alyssa lands, shouts out something and they take the fight outside. Nothing bothers him until he talks about she starts shouting out all the stuff she's done. She filmed herself having sex and then she left her prom to go have sex with two other people. And And she said, I was never taken advantage of. It was me looking for love. I was looking for you, you dummy. Like, I was just adventurous. And yeah, it was dumb, but like, I was really like, all I wanted was you. Like, you are what I was looking for. And now you're going to shame me because of it. Like, so Holden, I think there's different ways the movie, when you're watching this movie at this point, when they hit this conflict, it's sort of like, what, how the hell do you resolve this? And one of the ways is to be like, you're right. I'm just going to let it go. And then we're going to be happily ever after. And the other direction it goes, he's like, I'm going to try to do something on a level as you. The parallel story that keeps coming up is that Banky loves Holden in a way that is not just as a comic creator, is not as a best friend, but he's actually feels something for Holden specifically. He may not be gay, but he loves him in a way that's more than as a friend. And so the end of the movie, I think, is where everybody has issues with, is where Holden proposes that they all sleep together. And that, in that way, he could do something on a level that Alyssa has done, and Banky can take the leap into maybe he's gay or not. And then it works out for all of them. And this is the idea that this is the grand scheme he comes up with. And I think people have problems that'd be like, that's so like out of left field. Nobody sees this kind of coming. And I think Marcy kind of was saying it too, like, this comes out of left field. And I think that's the problem where everybody's like, this movie's weird. This movie's like out there.
I think, like, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. When they're at the hockey game, I don't know, like, Ben Affleck really soured on me really quickly once he starts finding stuff out about her.
Right.
Because he doesn't have an issue that she's slept with women. It's as soon as he finds out that she's slept with other guys and he's like, oh, I'm not the, like, because this movie is like, oh, it's not sex unless if there's penetration and all this stuff. So it's like some ego thing where he probably thinks he took her virginity, probably. And it's just like that whole thing. And then the fact that he's trying to get her to talk about it while they're out in public, which it's not, you know, a public, you know, like that's something you ask privately, but you don't like, you don't go about it in such a shady way as that. I thought it was a dream sequence because she was like, yeah. And then he fucked me. And then she yells it so loud. I was like, there's no way this is real. And then they go out into the parking lot and she starts going over everything she's ever done. And I love her line where she's like, they're my choices and I'm not apologizing for them because no, like we're all young and we all do things and you try things out and you sleep with different people and there's nothing wrong with that. And if somebody has an issue with that with you, then fuck them. Honestly, like he like grows a little bit by the end of it, which is like a good thing. Like I can't imagine if this movie ended and like there wasn't a little bit of growth to him But, you know, he's just so butthurt about everything. And I do like that she says, like, I'm sorry I, like, implied that you were the first guy I slept with, but I liked the way that it made you feel. And that's true, too. When you first start dating somebody, you kind of are a little bit different, or you say things because you really want this person to like you and accept you. And maybe you don't tell them everything right up front, or, you know, because you like making them feel good, you know. And she does apologize for that, which I don't think she has to apologize for shit, but I do like that that's in the movie, that she's like, I'm sorry that, like, maybe I did hurt you in that way. But then he doubles down and he's like such a dick to her, and I'm like, oh, fuck this guy at that point. Like, you know, that took a lot for her to apologize for something she didn't have to apologize for at all, in my opinion.
But I think that's what we're supposed to feel, isn't it? We're supposed to feel, fuck this guy. Which, in a way, there's a beautiful honesty to that, because, I mean, Holden is Kevin Smith, right? So, you know, this is Kevin Smith putting his own insecurities down on a piece of paper, and he's allowing us all to say, fuck you, you're an idiot. You're an absolute idiot. But he's also kind of at least holding his hands up and saying, yeah, I know. Look at the state of this guy.
And ultimately, when he does this proposition at the end, this is their breaking point for all of them, because she says to him, you know, I was thorough in my search. You are who I wanted to be with. I don't need to do anything else. And you're at it. They were just two people in two different places in their life. And she said, I love you. I always will. And then she slaps him. She's like, I'm not your fucking whore. Like, what do you think? I'm just going to sleep with somebody for you. Like, I'm going to sleep with somebody else to make you feel better. Like, and I think
I just cannot believe that, like, the love of your life is finally yours.
Yeah, exactly.
And you mess up and you have a big fight and your solution is to suggest a threesome.
Yeah.
How fucking stupid are you?
Yeah. How white male are you? You know, how straight white male are you?
Well, and that's, well, I think Dirk said it too. Like, if Kevin Smith is vulnerable at the time, this is his relation. It's not like in real life, Joey Lauren Adams isn't like this, but a lot of this stuff was part of their real relationship. They were going out at the time and, like, this came up in their relationship and this is how he worked through it. Which I thought was pretty interesting as, like, an artist. And I think there is some nobility in that vulnerability for Kevin Smith to admit, exactly what he said, to admit, I am an idiot. I let this stuff go in.
Yeah.
And Kevin Smith, as Silent Bob, when they come into the diner and Holden's talking to Jay and Silent Bob, and Silent Bob gives them all this wisdom of his experience with a girl named Amy and how that got in the way of their relationship. And to not make the same mistake he did. Like, Kevin Smith is talking to Kevin Smith. And I mean, it was pretty cool.
It's pretty meta. Yeah.
What I do enjoy, though, is Joey Lauren Adams in this just retains absolute agency of who she is throughout the entirety of this film. And it's not like this. She never kind of has a moment where she's like, I can fix him. She's like, no, this is me. I know who I am. And I, you know, and if that doesn't fit with you, then that's disappointing, but that doesn't change who I am. And there are moments, obviously, when they're together and they're having fun and they're in love, but there are very much, very clear moments of when she tells him he's a shithead and that's not appropriate and that's not how she is going to be spoken to and that's not how she's going to live a life. So I really like that. I think, like, for all the problems sometimes I can have with Kevin Smith's over dialogued stuff, I think he did kind of really create this character in Alyssa who knows who she is, and she is, you know, I feel like she's the hero of this film, even if she doesn't. But I feel like that's where we end up at the end. So any particular bits before we finish up? Any favorite scenes or any favorite bits? Marcy, Mikey.
Whenever she's singing that song and Ben Affleck thinks she's singing to him, God, his dancing is so creepy. Like, so also, I'm sorry, like, let's get that goatee off of him, too. It just doesn't help anything.
I think we should be Ethan Hawke in this movie.
Oh my God. And then you do get Matt Damon at some point, which was like, okay, I was kind of like, is he going to show up? And he did. So that made me laugh a little bit.
I think the entire bit in that club is my favorite. So with the Ben Affleck's awful dancing. And he's looking like he's the king of the club, and he thinks that she's singing towards him. Then Jason Lee's epiphany when he realizes exactly what's going on, and the smile on his face when he puts it all together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the conversation they have at the table about all their oral sex injuries is, I just think it's just, that's the best bit for me. That's the funniest.
They cut to Ben Affleck. The funniest part. Got stoic. Yeah, they're laughing for like 5 minutes and they cut to him. Yeah, it is a very funny movie too. I think we dove right into the emotions, but it is a very funny movie. The whole opening with Hooper X and the whole comic book stuff that they talk about, the whole conversation. We had a home computer that the whole family shared, and I figured out how to like change all the like the sounds when like error messages pop up on like an old Windows computer. And the thing we had for when there was an error was "What's a Nubian?" would pop up like every like 5 seconds. And even my stepdad would like walk around the house and go, "What's a Nubian?" And that was like part of like the family lingo.
Can I just tell you, when this movie started and they went in there and it all went down, I was sweating and I was like, no. I already knew this movie was like a little bit problematic, but I didn't know it was going to be like this problematic too. And then when you find out it's a bit, I was like, oh my God. And I was like, okay, like they're doubling down on all the problems in this movie. But no, luckily that wasn't the case.
I love that, talking about the, you know, different take on Star Wars. Keeping the brother down in a galaxy far, far away. I love all that talk. Nazi poster boy, blonde hair, blue eye, Luke Skywalker.
You get to see little baby Casey Affleck in the beginning too.
You do get to see Casey Affleck slagging off Brody as a tracer. I suppose there's lots of little Easter eggs in this. If you are a fan of Kevin Smith films, there's a lot of connectivity between other films and Alicia is the sister of somebody from Mallrats, and they mention people from Clerks and Mallrats, obviously. And like you say, they set up Dogma at the end with Jay and Silent Bob.
I was way into Kevin again. Like, I was way into Kevin. This was like the upper echelon for me. And I remember I was in college when Dogma was coming out, and I found a copy online of like the script, and I printed out the printer and I was reading it in my dorm room, going through the whole script, and I'm like thinking, this is an amazing comic. I don't know how it's going to work as like a movie. But I thought highly of Kevin. And for some reason though, something changed in him. The direction his career took, and his, like I said, I felt like Clerks is like, you know, his entry, it's a Cinderella story. He made the movie for $30,000 and whatever, and then he makes Mallrats on a huge budget, and then he makes this movie, which is really well done. So I'm like, this guy can do whatever he wants. And I just was kind of, looking back, felt disappointed in the way his career went. Slim, who does he did a podcast back in the day called Faves. Me and Dirk have been on that one. Shout out to Slim. But he did an episode with guys that picked Swingers as their movies, and then they said they were going to do Clerks, but something about Kevin Smith where It's like weird that Jon Favreau, it's like he went back in time to this point in Kevin Smith's career and stole his career and took it from there. Because Kevin Smith should have been the guy. They said this in the Faves episode, and it blew my, because I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I felt about Kevin, where he should have been the guy directing these Marvel movies. He should have been doing The Mandalorian. Like, if only like Kevin Smith pushed himself in that way. But Jon Favreau kind of like circumvented his career, because Kevin Smith was the guy talking about, he put a whole Stan Lee scene in Mallrats. Like, Stan Lee, I use that scene. My mom asked me for like a scene where she needed something to show mentorships, and Stan Lee is giving advice to Brody Bruce in Mallrats, and I use that. And I'm like, it should have been Kevin Smith. So that when they said that, that blew my mind, because something with Kevin Smith, he just started making decisions where, and it could be started smoking weed when he worked with Seth Rogen, but he started just saying, like, just make whatever you want. He started doing podcasts. He started just making whatever you want. So to me, like, this was, like, his last great. I love Zach and Miri, but, like, I think this is, like, his last great movie.
Oh, my God.
I love Zach and Miri. But I always wish, I think everybody fell in love, guys our age especially, fell in love with Kevin. And I just kind of, he's a very likable person. But I just think at this point in his career, he could have done whatever he wanted to at this point, to me. And maybe Chasing Amy didn't resonate with people and they thought it was so weird, but I just thought it was like, but watching it again, I'm like, you had, like, this was the culmination of everything he was working for, I thought.
I sometimes wonder, I've seen it, I don't even remember what happens in this movie, but I know he had a hard time filming Cop Out, and Bruce Willis and him really got into it. So I wonder, like, if maybe just he got sick of, like, didn't want to do big movies after that. Like, that was a big movie, a big budget, a big star. Tracy Morgan's also in it. And I couldn't even tell you. I've seen that movie. I couldn't even tell you what happens in it. And I don't know. Maybe that just turned him away. And he's big into horror, so he started doing his horror movies. And maybe that was, like, his passion, Mikey, that he wanted to do. So
he probably would have had to learn to move the camera, though, if he'd done some Marvel movies, Mikey. did you rediscover this movie? Did you?
I did. I loved it then for different reasons. I think as a teenager, a lot of the insecurities I realized I had in me, but I was a teenager and I had not lived yet. But I recognized early that how insecurities can get the best of you in a relationship. And looking at it now, I thought it, again, like, I commend the rawness of it, but just like the storytelling elements and like the scenes that follow that, you know, there, I don't think there was a wasted scene, even though there's a lot of like bullshitting and a lot of dialogue. Everything felt purposeful in the way that added to certain relationships. And I think as weird as the movie ended, I think for some people, I think that was the only way. It's sort of like there's five different endings he wrote, and this was the one that when you write it out, it's like, yeah, that's actually probably more interesting. And that's probably the way this character would have, what this character would have done. And this is the way this movie is supposed to end, because they ultimately break up and it's a year later and they've all gone their separate ways, and they kind of have like a moment where he sees them again at a distance. And they kind of just go on separate paths. It resonated with me. I rediscovered it. I think I was worried that, like, because of what the direction Kevin Smith went, if this movie really wasn't as good as I remember it. But I think I found a new level of love for this movie now. What about you, Dirk?
Beautiful. What about me? This is not my choice.
Well, no,
Mikey.
Did you? Well, you had watched it before. I mean, I probably hadn't watched this movie in like 20 years. So, like, I think after watching it too. Yeah. So, like, did you rediscover love for this?
I think I finally realized what it was about. I think I really understood it this time around. So I probably did rediscover it. I think it's still not my favorite Kevin Smith. I think that I love the world that he creates with these view askew movies. But I think for me, it probably isn't. It's probably not quite as funny as I want it to be. But I really do feel like it's a very, probably one of the most personal sort of films that he could have possibly ever made, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I've rediscovered this in a better place than I was. Yes, Mikey.
Hmm. Marcy, how did it find you?
You discovered it.
Yeah, discovered.
I think we kind of talked about it a little bit, but there's a surface level to this movie that you, like, in this day and age, there's like, it creates hesitation to wanting to ever watch it. But when you actually watch it, there are many layers to it. There's a lot of relatable things to it. And the core of it really is just a guy trying to figure out his insecurities and who he is and learn a little bit about himself and apologize, you know. Maybe not the best apology. I would rather have a verbal apology than a comic book, but that's just me.
Slap down. He just threw it down on the table.
Yeah.
Read that.
And I think, though, I think movies like this, one, it's nice to see how far we've come in cinema now, looking back on it. Like, where some of the things said in this, that they would not be okayed in a movie now.
No, that's for sure. You definitely can make this today. Right.
We have just come such a long way, which is, there's a great appreciation for that. But I think you can see that there is growth in this movie. Whether it's small, it's trying. It is trying for growth. And I think you can look at that as a positive. I think you can take it away as a positive. And I don't think you just have to, like I said, when you look at it at the surface, yeah, you can trash it and whatever, but you have to really watch it and pay attention to see like what's actually going on and take something away from it.
I will say this too, because I feel like I'm too down on Kevin Smith. And I will say one of the things that stuck with me that he did personally, because now, like I said, there's so many hours of podcasts he can do that he has done. But back then, I was really looking for anything that he had said. And he did something called An Evening with Kevin Smith, where he put out a DVD and he was just kind of telling stories about his, you know, doing movies and his upbringing and stuff. Like, it was like a stand up. But then he did some Q&A at the end. And this dude stood up and he said, I really want to make my movie. What advice do you have for me? Like, I feel like it should be made. And Kevin says, you know, those offers you get in the mail for credit cards. It's like, take all of those, take your parents, max them all out and put everything you can into this movie. And everybody laughs because he just spent like 90 minutes making everybody laugh. And this is the first time he's stoic. And he says, I am dead serious. If you're not going to go into financial ruin for your project, go back to the drawing board. And to me, that still sticks with me creatively, because it's like, yeah, if you're not going to, like, quote unquote, end your life for what you're trying to put out there, you really should. It's like a gut check for what you're doing creatively. I always thought that was really smart. And I think he is like an artist, and he was back then.
I like that a lot, Mikey, because in this day and age, so many things are taking a paycheck and taking money. And it's like, when you're actually putting money into something and you're putting your heart and soul into something, you can tell the difference. Mm. And you can tell that in especially his early movies. Mm. And just like I said, humble beginnings. I think Kevin Smith is an amazing person. Yeah. I think he is so much fun. I don't think he's ever changed.
Yeah.
And
that's a good point.
You know what? Like, there are like hardly any, for how famous he is, you know, he could be, like I said, like Affleck and Damon, like they could be total dicks, and maybe they are what we don't see. But mm-hmm. what we see, you know, Kevin Smith is just a genuine down to earth person. And I'm glad, like, you know, if he really wanted to make another one of these, I'm sure it could happen. And I'm sure, like, you'd still get his heart and soul into it, for sure.
The other advice I would say to people out there, because we were talking about, if anybody's listening and they have a best friend and they're worried about telling, but you actually feel something for them, and you're worried about the reaction that maybe Alyssa gives him, I would say, I've been in that position where I felt a lot and I knew what I felt, but I didn't want to lose my best friend. Tell that person what you feel. It's worth it. It'll be worth it. And I think Holden made the right decision.
Mikey, you about to tell me that you love me?
It's Karen, but yes, okay. It was about Karen. That was about Karen.
That was lovely, Mikey. Thank you for sharing that. I'm actually tearing up a little bit. So,
thank you to Yoli too for inspiring me to go back to the Kevin Smith whale, because he did mean a lot to me back then, this movie in particularly. And hopefully that's conveyed. And Ron gave a fist bump when I announced this movie. So I'm hoping we did it justice.
You had the Ron seal of approval. Yeah, oh my goodness.
Now, shall we move on to our music mixtape? Mm. Shall we take it to the bridge?
Speaking of Ron.
Our musical director. This is the part of the episode of the show where we all pick a song that we relate to this movie, we share it with each other, and we stick it in our playlist, which you can see down there in the show notes. I'm going to go first. The song that I've picked to this week is an ode to Holden. It's very simple. And it's by the band OK Go, and it is Get Over It. Get over it, mate.
That's good.
You know, just none of your beeswax. And that's it. Okay, go. Get over it. Marcy, what did you go for?
Mikey, I'm so glad you mentioned that thing about, like, just telling somebody you love them, don't be afraid, just do it, because that really stuck with me. I think that was my favorite scene, too, in the car when he finally tells her and just, like, risks it all. So I went for a song that reminded me of that. I picked Say Goodbye by Future Islands. And the lyrics that really stuck out to me that made me think of Holden in the car, it goes, I reach across the void, just hoping we can share a moment's time. And then the evening's mine, and I can finally say I love you right before I say goodnight. I love this song so much. It's such a, like, dancey, fun, good time. But it's, like, got a little bit of sadness, too. And it's just, like, do I tell this person how I'm feeling? Should I tell this person how I'm feeling? So that's why I picked it.
Jeez, guys. You guys brought it. And, Marcy, I will say, last week, your song in Office Space, I was listening to, and I really enjoyed it, by the way. I forget what it is.
It's so much fun. Did you dance to it? It's such a good dance song. I know it's, like, making fun of things, but it's, like, it's a bopper.
You guys are good.
Both of them started dancing in unison. Then when they had that conversation, head bob and shoulder shake at the same time. Mikey?
Well, thinking of him, thinking of the end of this movie, too, where one of the questions was, I was thinking of him and thinking of the end of this movie. What did you guys think? Do you think they'll ever go? Because it kind of leaves, that movie, I think, ends well. They could either never talk to each other again, or they could kind of rediscover each other again at the end of this movie.
Have you seen Jay and Silent Bob's reboot?
I did. I did see it.
I did not.
Marcy, see Clerks. That's your assignment for the first.
Okay, thanks.
But I felt like they could have, this was like a point in time where their paths cross and they all go in separate directions. And I was thinking of a song that kind of conveyed that. Ron was just in here. This is one of his favorite albums. And some of the lyrics are, I won't sing it, but she went away. And then I took a different path. No, I remember her face, but I can't recall the name. Now I wonder how What's Her Name has been. And this is Green Day, What's Her Name. Ron's favorite album.
Beautiful.
Nice, Mikey.
Beautiful, beautiful. I thought you were going to pick Boyz II Men, End of the Road. the way you were talking it up there. So there you go. Those were song choices. If you know them, don't worry about it. We've got you covered. If you click in the show notes, you'll see our playlist and you can listen to them all, not just the ones from this episode, but all the previous episodes as well. But if you're so inclined, why don't you get your fingers a-wiggling over to our Instagram at the_moviemixtape. And probably the weekend after this episode comes out, we'll have a bit of a poll on the stories and you can vote for who's your favourite. Why don't you do that? That'll be nice. But while you're there, why don't you also check out Mikey P's incredible artwork, Mikey P, with all your incredible, beautiful artwork. If you want to send us an email or a voicemail, our address is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. You can always write in with what your song choice would be, what your movie choice would be, or just general greets. That would be all right. Maybe when you saw Rosie Perez walking a dog, that'd be nice, doing that sort of thing. Or just like I said at the start of the show, if you look in the show notes, there'll be a link to our Discord channel.
Mm.
There endeth the episode. Chasing Amy has been chased, and she sat down and she's having a cup of tea. And Marcy Dale, it is your choice next for the second movie in our Rediscovered mixtape. What are you going for?
So, Mikey, I took Rediscovered a little bit differently. I know I love this movie. It's been a while since I've seen it, so it's kind of like rediscovering just because I haven't seen it in so long. But I know I love this movie still. Maybe more rediscovered because I don't know if a lot of people even remember this movie. Also, speaking of Alan Rickman, he is in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with 2005's The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh,
nice. Have you seen it, Mikey?
I have not.
Wow. Oh, I think you'll have fun with it.
Cool.
Hopefully. I think Dirk has seen it. I'm pretty sure he has.
Yeah. When you said Alan Rickman, for some reason, I thought you were going to say Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Not quite. That's,
I don't quite know.
That's next mix.
I thought she was saying Dogma.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, my God.
Well, oh, my goodness. I'm looking forward. I don't think I've seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie version, since I saw it that one time at the cinema when it came out.
You saw it in theaters? I saw it in theaters.
Yeah,
too.
I saw it
we'll
in
save
theaters.
It for the pod.
Yeah,
sorry, save it for the episode.
Don't worry.
Cut this out.
We'll cut all that out so nobody knows we've previously seen this movie. I can't wait to watch that again.
It is on Hulu and probably Disney Plus for Dirk, then.
Hmm.
I think it is on Disney Plus, yeah. Yeah, I think it probably is. Not that I've got it memorized, but everybody out there in podcast land, you can watch it and then listen to the episode probably in 2 weeks' time. So we will see you then. Goodbye!
Bye for now.
Suck on that, you suckers!
Movie Mixtape is presented by Dirk, Marcy and Mikey P. All episodes are edited by Marcy and Dirk. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us over on Instagram at @the_movie_mixtape.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.
Is that too long?